It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Renee are here. Renee has his iPhone XR. He'll have his review for us. He's also got an invitation, a Big Mac, perhaps Mac, definitely iPad event coming up October 30th. And man, those invitations sure are pretty.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 633, recorded Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018. We left in the honey. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Privacy.com. Stop using the same card number everywhere. Use Privacy virtual cards and get a $5 credit off your first purchase. Learn more and sign up in under a minute with your debit or checking account at privacy.com/MacBreak. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. And by IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career with flexible training and binge-worthy content from IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak30 for 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. And if you're signing up for a personal premium or standard monthly membership, you'll also get a free 7-day trial. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple, and it's here. My invitation came, and you know, it's really great. The art is really fantastic. Each invitation, handcrafted, uniquely, one of a kind. And inside, it says, to talk about our stuff, Apple LLC. That's a little suspicious.
Registered in Delaware for the tax.
It's phishing. It's phishing, Leo. Be careful.
Renee, do you have yours? You can show it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm guessing they made like 400 of these, and I'm guessing they were all handcrafted by Serenity Caldwell.
They're beautiful.
That's my best guess.
And yeah, I would, cool. You know, I as a guess, since we kind of pretty much know that the event is going to be an iPad event, I would guess these are all created on an iPad, right? That's the idea.
In
Procreate or something like that. There's more in the making. There's Neil Seibert's. Here's Todd Hazelton's. Oh, yours is fiery and beautiful.
I think I got one of the better ones, to be honest with you. It looks very pencil made.
So everybody got a different one. Lance Yulinoff.
Is there a Charizard in there somewhere?
I think there was one. There was also a SpongeBob one, right? I think.
Was there?
It was amazing, yeah.
And the final count
CNN
is... There's 400 different ones?
CNN posted 370. I've been led to believe we haven't seen them all yet, so there'll probably be some at the event, but I'm guessing there'll be over 400.
Is the thinking that each journalist got a different one?
Yeah, for sure. Each journalist got a different one. Absolutely.
There was no repetition.
No.
Wow. They're all emailed, by the way. None of them are printed, which is a shame because I think this would be a great printed.
I didn't get an invitation, so I have to ask, how high resolution is it? Like, is it high enough resolution that you could conceivably print it up and put it on your wall? Or collaborate on a set of like trading cards that we could all like collect and swap?
Oh, one year they gave out – they have given out things at events before. I mean, a couple of years ago, they gave out those little Apple Park pins when they opened the Steve Jobs Theater. So maybe they could make a deck of Apple art. That would be fantastic.
Pins would be so
cool. I would buy the crap out of that.
Or deck, yeah. I'm curious. Did they go out and ask people to do these?
They have an amazing graphics design team, but they're so busy doing so many things. Yeah. And 400 is like, again, I was joking. Serenity Caldwell did them all, and that's probably why she's been there for the last few months. But that's, you know, this would take several Serenity Caldwells working at capacity.
It is the kind of thing Serenity would have done, right?
Damn these young people and their unbridled energy and ability to focus.
this is mine, but it's not real. If I presented this, I don't think I'd get in. It's okay because it's in New York. It's at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Bam. There's some of the other ones. I like the iron filings one. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some real cool ones.
Bam is a performance space, not just a school.
Yeah.
It's super interesting, right? Like, it's artistic invitations at a music venue for an iPad and Mac event.
Uh-huh. Should we read the, when you need we read the tea leaves or no?
No, they could. You know, there's so many schools down there. They could have just basically said to a class here or to a design class, here's $100 to make us one Apple logo.
Right.
Because when I first heard about how differentiated these things were, I thought that'd be an interesting like AI project to essentially hand design, let's say 24, and then tell an AI to make 20 in each of these classes or 10 in each of these classes of things that we've handmade and make variations. But there's such wide variations that it really does feel like there's a human being. You know, there's meatware involved in creating these things. And if anything, it got us. I think it's maybe this is just the Apple marketing's final revenge against people like trying to read the tea leaves of, okay, so half of it looks like it's Chrome, but the light source isn't on the upper left. The light source looks like it's sort of like a ring light. So maybe we're talking about they're going to be announcing a brand new iMovie feature. Like, okay. Here are 400 different invitations to each individually scrutinize. You'll have content for 3 weeks after the event.
Of course, Apple doesn't say what the event's going to be, and there's more in the making, doesn't really tell us much. But back in August, we saw a couple of icons in iOS 12 that implied a bezel-less iPad. We've since seen more, no home button. So the expectation, what's interesting is, have there been supply chain leaks on these at all?
I haven't seen
it. Not that I remember. No.
Really well kept secret compared to, say, Google's Pixel 3 phone.
Well, those are different. Go ahead, Andy.
No, I was going to say, even based on Apple events, usually by this time we would have seen something, because they at some point they have to shrug and say, okay, now the untrustworthy brothers-in-law of people that we actually trust have to know about this. So we're going to accept that someone's going to have a bezel or someone's going to have a good rendering somewhere.
So what follows is complete speculation. There's not.
So I think the big difference here is that iPhone and Samsung Galaxy phones are where all the money is, even for accessory makers, and they will pay, beg, cheat, borrow, blackmail, anything they can to get information out of supply chain that will let them get product ready as fast as possible when a new phone launches. The Pixel does not sell in that. I mean, it's got huge mind share, but it doesn't sell in high quantity, so there's probably not as much incentive for supply chain leaks. And iPads, I mean, there have been leaks over the years, but probably also like the case of the industry is probably not slathering at the bit to get. I mean, it's business for them, but it's nowhere near Galaxy or iPhone business for them.
Yeah. Okay.
To say nothing of investor interest. If you can figure out ahead of time that the new iPad is definitely going to have require the same sort of camera setup for Face ID as the iPhones, that gets you scrambling towards seeing who might be supplying that new camera and what's their position right now. So yeah, that's a really good point, Renee. There's a lot of commercial interest as opposed to just like nerd interest that we have in getting things early.
Our source from the supply chain, Ming-Chi Kuo, has merely said he expects a bezel-less iPad Pro with Face ID and an 11-inch model to replace the 10.5-inch model, which is about 18 months old. And a 12.9-inch bezel-less model. Does that comport, you think, with what?
Yeah, I mean, so what they're basically going to keep the 10.9-inch iPad casing the same and fill it with more screen. With the 12.9, they're going to keep the screen the same size and chisel off some of the casing.
Oh, interesting. So the 12.9, it's so big anyway, it would be nice to make it a little smaller.
Make it more portable.
Yeah. Okay. But so you get the same size screen. That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, but the fact that they still have a smaller, physically smaller device that could have pretty much the same size display, it would be an interesting opportunity for them to continue to make a 12.9-inch iPad Pro that is almost explicitly, look, for you people who are designers, who are movie editors, who are photo people, given that they've already been so happy to announce a quote real unquote version of Photoshop releasing next year, wouldn't it be cool to have a 12.9-inch physical 12.9 inch iPad that has the screen of, let's say, a 15 inch screen, that much more real estate to play upon, much more places to put things like toolbars and other stuff like that. So I wouldn't necessarily think that their idea would be to have the bigger iPad smaller but with the same size screen. It's if anything, all these Microsoft Surface devices have kind of shown designers that it's kind of cool to be able to use that wonderful pencil on a larger canvas instead of a smaller one.
With the narrower bezels, you lose the home button. That means Face ID. Okay. Face ID does not work, at least now, in a sideways mode. So
it should for iPad.
You think it will?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there was a weird rumor that the smart connector would be on the same edge as the Lightning connector is on the short edge.
That might be the pencil connector.
I can't imagine you wanting to use your iPad. I hardly ever use it in portrait mode.
Remember the original keyboard dock, though, where they wanted you to do that?
Yeah. that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you guys use your iPad in landscape mode mostly?
It depends. I use it in portrait mode. I'm reading, I use it in landscape mode. I'm working.
Yeah.
So, I do like to have that. I do like to have that choice.
Then here's a really weird
comic book
one.
And everything else mode.
Seth Weintraub of 9to5 mentioned this Sunday on Twit. He said, because we've seen rumors that there will be a USB-C connector instead of a Lightning connector. He said he thinks there'll be both.
I don't think that's silly, because they certainly do have enough room to put both in there. And although I think that it's natural for them to switch to USB-C wherever they can in the future, that leaves the problem of are you going to force people to have
pencil?
A dongle?
Exactly. There's a lot of...
Plus the idea of being able to have power plus another accessory. If Apple really, everything I hear about internally at Apple is they are very, very excited about the pro capabilities of the iPad. To really now just, whereas before they were content to sort of hint that this thing could be a replacement for a notebook, and it's certainly competitive against any Windows notebook. Less than $800 or $900. Now they really know what they've got there with the processor and with the audience that they've already got in there. So the ability to be able to say, well, now we're giving you two ports because you might want to keep one powered up while you've got the other one attached to, let's say, an audio accessory or a video accessory. I'm not 100% behind this idea of it having two ports, because Apple seems like a company that would try to reduce it to one, but I don't think it's a ridiculous idea.
Well, they did, right? The original one had two dock ports, and Steve axed it at the last minute. So,
what do you think, Renee?
Well, so I was watching the Pixel Slate event, and there is nothing I want less in a tablet than Intel. But when the minute I saw those USB-C ports, it makes so much sense. One on each side. Let me put it in computer mode, plug that in, give me the backlit keyboard too while you're at it, and I will be super happy. I don't know if Apple will do two ports, just because why do two ports when you can do one? Yeah. But I would so much prefer it.
Yeah, it would give you all sorts of flexibility, and it would confirm. And this is what Seth said. He said he really thinks that this is going to be designed to work with a keyboard and a mouse, that it's going to be a computer screen.
I don't see a mouse.
Seth Staff would have found all the strings for mouse already in the... Rambo would have found all that.
Yeah. And it could be, as you mentioned earlier, that Type-C rumor merely means a Type-C power adapter with a Type-C to Lightning cable. Some people were thinking maybe that's what that rumor is. Sometimes this stuff gets mangled in translation.
Also, if they do, Apple wouldn't do a USB-C port that's just for power. They would make sure that it could do as much as they could possibly make the thing do. So, again, the kind of speculation that you're allowed to engage in when you're a pundit and it's still a week before release date, it would excite me to have the idea of a USB-C port on an iPad Pro, thinking that perhaps they decided to future-proof the platform this way, saying that, guess what? You said that a lot of your podcasters, a lot of your audio engineers who want like really good audio gear, guess what? Here's a full USB-C port, and here's an API and a new stack for you. So you can create a professional-level audio recording rig that goes around the iPad Pro. Could you imagine even the idea of an iPad Pro with the ability for to have like a live external display through USB-C through Thunderbolt and not through like a Lightning port adapter? So there'd be a lot of possibilities. And again, the vibe that I consistently get from Apple about how they realize they're selling a $1,000 computer device, and they are insisting that it will do anything that any other $1,000 computer device will do. So that's very consistent. It's exciting.
We'll know all by this time next year. I mean, next week.
Yeah.
And next year, but next week especially, because the Apple event is 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, which is 1300 UTC. So,
and you're not on vacation, Leo.
I'll be here. Yes.
I know.
Next year, I'm going away in October to avoid the September. And now you can't win with Apple.
No, just don't announce it, Leo. You got to keep your plan secret.
they don't care about me. They don't invite me. So
they know they got your money either way.
They will get my money either way. I actually look forward to getting a new iPad. In fact, I might be tempted by a 12.9. That's a slightly smaller form factor, but because I liked the 12.9, it's just so big. I felt like I was carrying a pizza box around.
See, so many people playing Candy Crush with them on airplanes still to this day. It's
the 12.9, really.
Yes, that's amazing. You walk through it's the biggest Candy Crush, Leo.
I got to say, the number of times over the past year, I bought the 12.9 as soon as it came out, and that's one of my primary computing devices.
Really,
the number of times that I have looked for my 9.7 inch iPad, but I can't find it. Oh, damn. Okay, there's my iPad mini. But damn it, there's my iPad mini. Oh, wait, the iPad. That's not the iPad mini. That's a 9.7-inch iPad. I'm just not used to I'm used to seeing a device that's 12.9 inches with a home button at the bottom of it. It just feels like an iPad mini now.
Any chance that the mini will be rejuvenated?
Ming-Chi Kuo said that today. He said he was expecting it either this week or early next year. But he made it sound almost like it's one of those every 3 years Apple throws out a new iPod Touch that just has an updated processor for people who won't take anything but that. That's very much what it sounded like. And he said the panel quality might be worse, which would be weird as well.
See, that's weird. I would love that because I still have my iPad mini is old enough that it feels slow, but there's so many times where it's exactly what I need something that's bigger than my phone, but smaller than even my iPad, something that I can, I don't have to take a real laptop bag for, I keep using it over and over again. And as someone who rides buses and subways a lot, I like to have something that I can do iPad style work on without when I'm on that bus or that train saying, "Hi everyone, here's me with my $1,300 512 gigabyte Slate computer."
Yeah.
Yes, you can run faster than me, so by all means grab it while you're on your way out the door.
Well, I'm really interested to see what Apple does. They may have some real surprises, and there have been precious few leaks. The other thing, of course, everybody's going to be looking for is refreshed Macintosh. What is Renee, what's the chance for that?
Pardon me?
Refreshed Macintosh. Are we going to see MacBook Airs, Mac Minis?
The MacBook Air replacement.
Mac Mini is 4 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, all of that. All of that. It's Mac season, Leo.
Boy, that would be a very expensive Tuesday for me.
Everything but the Mac Pro and MacBook Pro.
Now, the Pro they could pre-announce because they're kind of implied to be out next year.
Yeah, but don't. I mean, their record with pre-announcing stuff lately, no. Just keep it all secret until you're ready to actually put it in the store.
Yeah, you're right.
They're also creating very low expectations for timetable. They're creating high expectations for what they're going to release as a Mac Pro, low expectations for when you're going to expect it, which I think is all they can do right now, considering that they're essentially rebooting that entire platform. But it would be so exciting to get a new Mac Mini. I would be not only just to have this because I'm a huge fan of the Mac Mini. I think it's probably my favorite Macintosh today, but again, it's been shown so little love in the past 4 years that it's for people who are fans of the Macintosh, it almost feels like a sign that they don't care about the Macintosh particularly. So just for them to put some real effort into the Mac Mini, and I'm hoping not just we're putting modern silicon in there, but also we've decided to redesign it. We've decided to make it look as cool on your desktop as any other Mac does. Something like the Apple TV form factor, maybe scaled up just a little bit, a nice sleek black box with one white LED on it. That would show that there's still a lot of love for us click and mouse users.
It'd be a mini pro kind of.
Please don't call anything a pro. Anytime they put a pro on something and it's not an iOS device, they ruin it. Okay, the iPad.
Here's a piece of weak information.
The Mac Pro.
The Pro Mac Pro. Pro Mac Pro. So, from 9 to 5 Mac, a K through 12 education customer recently placed an order for a MacBook Air iPad and Apple Pencil. The iPad and Pencil shipped, but the school received an email saying the MacBook Air is delayed and will now ship on October 30th.
Oh.
Is that...
They should have delayed the Apple Pencil. No. Oh, no, because the new Apple Pencil won't work with the 9.7-inch iPad.
But that's fine. When, if they didn't have an... Unless they have something that is... Sorry, rewind, playback. Wouldn't they have delayed it and then canceled it and offered them an ability to place that new order towards new hardware that they haven't seen yet? Unless they're expecting to release something that is identical to the MacBook Air, just with upgraded internals. And I don't see them doing just an upgraded MacBook Air with new internals. I see them reinventing it at this point.
MacBook, MacBook Air, Mac Mini, all three?
Yeah, and probably coffee lake bumps for the iMac as well, because we didn't get those yet.
Okay. This will be a very
not coffee lake Tuesday, refresh. But. Intel just announced those. It'll take a while for that to become real, but coffee lake by itself would be way more than enough for a Mac Mini.
I'm always up for fresh coffee. That's all I can say. Let's.
Did you see they canceled the 10-nanometer process officially? Or I think was it officially now? Or is it just rumors though?
Well, they denied that they were having that. There was they said no. We're just too cool for 10-nanometer now. It's not because we were having problems actually making it work.
So
funny you think we do that.
Ian from Anantech said that they're probably going to take the 10-nanometer process, make it work, and call it 7-nanometer, which I thought was a brilliant analysis.
So the company tweeted a denial saying, media reports published today that Intel's ending work on the 10-nanometer processor on 2. We're making good progress on 10-nanometer. Yields are improving, consistent with the timeline we stated during our last earning reports. That was as of October 22nd, yesterday.
Okay.
So I don't.
It's 4 years late, so I mean, it's going to be.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. Is they're losing the pipeline. Other reports that I've seen are just like the products that they were hoping to make for the 10-nanometer process were designed during the Obama administration at this point, and now unfortunately we need a Trump administration design for the CPU for they're actually going to leverage it correctly.
Well, maybe they'll go straight to 7.
Yeah, these are all marketing terms. Like people, they have absolutely no relationship to anything with like real sciencey. It's just they call it whatever they think will sound cool and competitive, and think about a justification later. So they might just relabel it as 7-nanometer to sound like they've caught up.
Yeah, I think it's more likely they'll have a 10-nanometer process, but they'll call it like just like Apple calls this has a true depth color, and they have all these names. They simply call whatever it is technology they're working on. I think they're going to do 10-nanometer, but they're going to call it, you know, ultra nanometer technology or super tensy line technology.
This is good. This show is all going to be about chips. This is a chip heavy show. We have more chip news to come, and we really ought to talk about the new Apple product that Renee Ritchie has just reviewed. That's coming up in just a little bit. I'll be getting mine on Friday. You got the black version.
I am the black Power Ranger, apparently.
Yeah. I ordered the red. I couldn't bring myself to order the banana phone.
It looks much. I didn't think I would like it, but it looks much better. I forget who was it. I forget who had it now. I think it was Lauren Good, maybe. Lauren Good had the yellow one. It looked much nicer than I thought it would.
It looks good on her. I don't know if it looked good on me.
Justine had the coral, which also looked much better than I thought it would.
I ordered the product red one, but
I want purple. Yo, all I wanted was purple, and I didn't get it.
Didn't get purple. Did you get a Metagross with Meteor Mash?
I got quite a few Metagrosses with me. I had a really good. I used this phone for it because I wanted to see. So this is my version of a real world battery test. Was doing Pokemon Go Community Day without charging the phone.
Wow!
Because it's like, and I put the screen brightness to 100%. Left the GPS, like left everything. No battery saver, nothing. And it was a tank. It started off at 85%, and I ended 4 hours later at like 15%, which was better than I used a 10S Max. As a control, nice. And that was down to 12%. So,
nice. That's pretty good. So there's the first data point on the new iPhone XR. We'll get more in just it's great for community day. How many Belden did you catch?
I got so many shiny ones, Leo. I think I got 13 shinies, and I evolved 4 of them.
And you evolved them all the way up to Metagross.
Yes.
And then if you do that within 4 hours of the end of Community Day, are you guaranteed Meteor Mash or you just have a shot at it?
Yes.
You're guaranteed.
No, you're guaranteed Meteor Mash. Yeah.
I encountered,
which I keep saying Monster Mash.
Monster. I encountered a Metagross with Meteor Mash in a gym yesterday and found it to be no more challenging than anything else.
Well, there is Pokemon news, Leo. The Halloween event starts today, and the dragon, ghost dragon, Giannatra, is going to be in raid starting this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. I saw that little message from, what's his name? Willow Twig?
Professor Willow.
Professor Willow. I'm sorry. We're 12.
Renee, we are.
We're just stuck.
What I don't get, Leo, is that, and thank goodness for you, you still have that sort of in touch with your sense of wonder to have so much love for the Pokemon game, and yet a yellow iPhone. That's the line you're not going
to
cross.
I have to draw the line.
That's
because it looks like Pikachu, Andy. It looks like Pikachu, and he will not have that.
Oh God! How cool is it going to just get like a skin? Just get like some vinyl stickers for the back to make into the Pikachu phone.
Now I really want it. I want the Pikachu phone.
Do you? Here, Leo. There you go.
Let's see your Meteor Mash. Oh, man. I'm just so jealous. All those 100%. Look at those.
I don't have 100%. I threw one away. I found out later I threw the 100% away, Leo. I was very sad.
Oh, you got it. Man, you got to do something about that.
It was a low CP, and I was desperate for space, so I just kept deleting them. And then someone said, did you keep it? And I said no, and I cried.
I still have not won 100% Pokemon.
We'll have to fix that, Leo.
Not one. But I'm about to become best friends with my wife, which if I plant a lucky egg at the right time,
yes,
could be worth 200,000 fine experience points. You've done this before, I take it.
Yes, it is. It is amazing.
I'm sorry. I want to welcome a new sponsor to the show. This is actually something much more serious and so cool. Privacy.com. I use privacy.com whenever I buy stuff on the internet. I love it for subscriptions. You don't use the same password everywhere. Why use the same credit card number everywhere when you shop online? Privacy.com generates a brand new virtual Visa card number for every purchase you make online with just one click. I use the Chrome browser extension. There's also an Android and iOS app. You link your virtual cards to either to your U.S. checking account or your debit card. You can freeze and unfreeze cards. You could set spending limits per charge, per month, or per year. I do that all the time. When you use a card for the first time with a merchant, it locks to that merchant. So no one can steal the card and use it against your will. And it's so great on subscriptions now. I use it for all my subscriptions because it's so easy to freeze or cancel the card. So you never have to worry about being billed twice or upgraded without your consent. No worry about forgetting to cancel subscriptions or free trials. And you can earn up to 5% cash back. And refunds work even if the card is closed or paused. Virtual cards locked to a merchant. You don't have to worry about changing your card everywhere if one gets hacked. You'll get a decline email or a push notification if the hacker tries to use the card elsewhere. I've turned those notifications on. I love that. I always know what's going on with my cards. You can even figure out when merchants got hacked, often before they know themselves. Because you'll say, wait a minute, that card is locked to that merchant. How could that be used somewhere else? I just love this. This is the, let's see, I probably shouldn't show. You know, I could show, actually, couldn't I, my credit cards because they're locked to the merchant. So even if you saw the number, you couldn't use it. I have, how many of these do I have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I have them for everything. See, when I buy movie tickets at Fandango, I use my privacy. And this is, by the way, the Chrome extension, which I love. Privacy.com is truly the best way to do this. Security is at the core of what they do. They're PCI DSS compliant. Same security standards as your bank. Sensitive information secured using military-grade encryption. The information is encrypted with split-key crypto. And partial keys are held by separate employees, so they have no access to it. No single person can access the sensitive data on the server without those keys. It's like the nuclear launch codes. And these cards let you, this is what I really like. They let you use any billing info you like. I always provide 123 Main Street, any town, USA. And it works. So the merchant gets nothing, not even your zip code. Two-factor authentication, of course. Privacy.com is free. Can I mention that? It's free to use. They make their money on the merchants. They don't have to sell your information. There are no hidden fees. I should mention, once again, it ties to your bank account or your debit card. So it's really like it's like a debit card. But that's fine for me because I don't want to pay interest fees. I just want this to work. And by the way, I get like $50 a month back. I get a ton of money back because I use it so often. Just like credit cards, they make their money from merchants. I'm going to say it again. So they won't sell your information. They won't charge you. There are no hidden fees. So far, privacy.com has saved customers over $100 million in unwanted and unauthorized charges. And when I have regular, you know, weekly fees, I use it for that. I use it for things like Netflix. Protect your privacy. Protect your money. Virtual cards from privacy.com. To learn more and get a $5 credit on your first purchase, we're going to give you $5 just so that you use this URL, privacy.com/MacBreak. Privacy.com/MacBreak. I can't encourage you to sign up more to sign up for this. This is really awesome. And actually, I've been using this for months, long before they became a sponsor. Privacy.com/MacBreak. All right. Renee's got his review up. Almost yes, sir. All the best for way, way less. $250 less than an iPhone XS. $350 bucks less than a XS Max. But it sits right in the middle, right, size-wise.
Yeah, and Gruber did some math pointing out that you can get a 128-gigabyte version of the XR and not of the XS. So if you're just a little over 64 but don't want to pony up for the 256, you can save even more money just by going with the 128.
So they don't offer a 128 in the XS sizes.
Yeah. They go to 256 and then 512, which is like half a terabyte in your pocket.
Yeah, and I never – honestly, 64 is probably enough for everything I do. Most
it depends how much 4K and stuff like that that you shoot. So
yeah, and if you use you know the iCloud photo and you know and I you know if you don't put 100 books on there and your entire music library, 64 gigs is a huge
amount of data. Your 19 Metallica original sound. I'm not pointing at Jim Dalrymple specifically, but some people like having all their music with them.
Some people want it all and but don't want to stream it. I understand that.
Nice hunk of glass.
Okay, show us. Let's see. So it is it is glass back.
Yes. The front glass is exactly the same as the iPhone XS. The back glass is somewhere in between the 10 and the XS. It's stronger than the 10, not quite as strong as the XS.
Now, some people said that the bezels were unsightly compared to the XS.
They're not unsightly. They're just
bad
a little
me.
Bit bigger. Here, I turn on the flashlight somehow. That's great. Haptic touch to the rescue. There we go.
You can
so
see
they
them.
Are slightly bigger.
If you're coming, and it's an LCD, not an OLED, but if you're coming from an iPhone 6, 7, or 8, you're not going to notice that.
No, not at all. I mean, if I hold up one of these next to it, close. I keep getting beta things today, Leo. It's my beta day.
And one
so
of
if
the,
I hold up this next to it, like it's nothing of the same.
Yeah. You do get a notch.
There's a hard.
But yeah, I mean.
Yes.
And by the way, you're getting all of the internals of the XS.
It's rather interesting because Apple, according to Wall Street, Apple's only job is to sell more iPhones or to sell more expensive iPhones. And they've been doing that with the Plus and with the 10 line. They've been really raising average sales prices. And now with the 10R, I mean, some people are likening it to the iPhone 5C, but that did not have Touch ID. It had the previous generation processor. It really was an iPhone 5, not an iPhone 5S. The iPhone 10R is an iPhone 10. It has the same processor, same true depth camera, same wide angle camera on the back. It is much closer to an iPhone XS than it is an iPhone X. And that could, $250 cheaper, that could really skew Apple's ASPs down again, which would not make Wall Street happy. But Apple really wants to take the technology that they have in the 10 line and make it accessible to more people. They have this annoying habit that Wall Street hates, which is to try to grow rather than just monetize. And I think it's good long-term thinking, but I think it'll get them yelled at short-term.
Yeah, bravo, and screw Wall Street, because I don't think Wall Street's got their best interests at heart. They just want to cash in as quick as they can.
It's still a $750 phone.
It's not cheap.
That's it. But that said, it's a very, very pleasant sign that Apple has consistently tried to do this, where we feel as though we have a list of price levels that our customers are comfortable with. However, that said, we are going to continue to try to take the features of the higher end phones and bring them into the lower price points. Yeah. So the fact that they decided not to make the iPhone X into a luxury brand, that's here's the $1,000 and up phone always, but simply to say we're going to use this to drop into the one end of this pipeline features that in a year or two's time is going to be in the mainstream $750 phone. That's really, really great.
What, Rene, is missing? What don't you get?
So you don't get the well. That's sorry, not missing. Sorry. That's gone from all of them.
Long gone, Handy.
You don't get the OLED display. You get an LCD display. Apple says it's their best LCD ever. I find it, like, they're so good at color calibration and color matching. It is, you know, it's traditional iPhone DPI, the same DPI they've had since the iPhone 4, the same DPI they had on the iPhone 8. But you, like, in daily use, you really can tell. It doesn't do the inky blacks of OLED and doesn't have the extreme contrast of OLED. So Apple's not advertising it as an HDR panel, even though some LCD TVs say, well, we go brighter, so that counts as HDR. Right. Apple doesn't want to play that game, so they say it's not. Like, it'll play HDR 10 and HDR and Dolby Vision content, but it'll do the best job it can, but they're not claiming that it's HDR. So you're missing the panel, and then you're missing the telephoto lens on the back. So you have the exact same wide angle lens as the iPhone XS, 30% larger with deeper and bigger pixels and the smart HDR feature, but you don't have that 2.4 aperture telephoto lens.
Yeah.
So no 2x optical zoom and no real depth data like you'd get off the true depth camera, off the dual camera system on an iPhone X. They do something very similar to the Google Pixel, which is they use the parallax data from the phase adjust focus system, what Apple calls focus pixels, and they mix that with a segmentation mask. The thing that's really interesting, though, the thing that I spent most of my time asking about and looking into, is that Apple had their camera teams go and get a bunch of high-end lenses and cameras, which I'm sure they hated to do, and just shoot the crap out of them, and then build up a model, a physical model of what an iPhone lens could be. And it's different between the iPhone XS, because that's the telephoto, and the iPhone XR, because they did it for the wide angle. So taking the same shots, they didn't want to have a perfect sanitized computational lens. They wanted it to be quirky and have a personality, like a real world lens. So the bokeh is not just a disc blur that's layered on top. There's not just like a smooth fill over the back. It actually renders on the silicon this entire world that as much as a computer vision can understand, and like overlapping lights and distortion around the outside, like you'd get with a real lens. And it's hard to describe it, but when you look at what it used to do and what it does now, or what some other phones do, they really do just apply a Gaussian or a disk blur. It's like night and day. It's really, really cool technology.
The other reason people might want it is it's one of those size things. It might be just right. Here's a great image that you took comparing the iPhone X on the left, the iPhone XR on the right, or rather the XS on the left, iPhone XR on the right, and the XS Max on the far right. The middle one is let me start over. In order from left to right, the XS, the XR, and the XS Max. So it's between the two, right?
Yeah, because of the bezels, it's probably closer to the 10 to the Max than it is to the regular size one. But it feels in between. I actually do like it better because I found the Max just a little bit big for me. I was a huge iPhone Plus fan.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying the XS Max is just too big. But I want more than the XS. This is right there, right?
And it has all the features that the XS has that I wish the Max has that I wish the XS has, like display zoom. And when you rotate it sideways, it has a split view controller.
Oh, interesting.
So I really like all that.
Okay. So now I'm presuming you're going to keep your XS Max as your real phone or not.
I ordered the XS Max, but I think George is probably going to just rob me of that, and I'll end up getting a XS because I know a lot of people are saying they're going to go with the XR, that they think it's a much better phone. I really, really like the camera system on the XS. I shoot in 2x all the time, and I like the OLED screen because I'm a complete nerd over HDR. So for me, it's worth the extra $250 to get those two features. I think I'm the exception, not the rule, though. And I think most people will be super happy with the 10R.
All the reviews are coming out or came out. The embargo lifted yesterday, but the phone will arrive Friday. I suspect you'll be able to walk into an Apple store and pick one up without pre-ordering. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, they always do that. They always reserve some stock for in-store because as much as Angela Ahrens wants to move everything to a distribution platform where nobody ever has to wait in the line again, there are some people who just want to show up in the stores that day and they know if they don't have stock, there'll be a lot of disappointed people. So there's always some stock that's held just for launch day.
But right now, it looks like 1 to 2 weeks if you order pre-order. Yeah. It looks like it'll be 1 to 2 weeks for every version. Is that right?
It went down again this morning. It was further out on a lot of the models earlier this morning and it went down again.
T-Mobile went right away, but Verizon, which is probably in the U.S., the unlocked one you want. Yeah, I'm seeing AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile all being...
I mean, they're all Intel modems now. So like in the old days, if you really wanted a Qualcomm modem, you could go with Verizon. But if you want to use it on Verizon at any point ever, it still behooves you to get the Verizon model.
Oh, is that true? You can't use the non-Verizon models on...
I mean, they're fussy. I think technically you can do anything, but LTE whether they'll allow it on their network or
not. So I ordered my product red version on Verizon because that way I could get it right away. But I think
I ordered product red too.
If you waited, it's too late. Yeah, I think the red's really pretty. Yeah. But Andy's right. If I can play Pokemon Go, I should probably go straight to the coral.
Or the Pikachu yellow.
Pikachu yellow. It might. Yeah. I'm not saying anything, but it might go with my Halloween costume.
I apologize. I'm a bit spacey. The embargo was 6 a.m. Eastern time, and I literally did not sleep yet. So I'm sort of
6 a.m.
doing my
today?
Best to hang in there. Yeah, it was 6 a.m. this morning.
Oh, man.
3 a.m. Cupertino standard
so
time.
So how many words did you write last night? Jeez.
It wasn't the worst. So the words I got done 2 days ago, but the video took me a lot. The video ended up being like 30 minutes, and it took me a lot longer to edit than I thought it would.
I tell everybody, don't do idio video. Idio. Don't do idio. It just takes too dang long. What kind of car is that?
So that was a little joke because Apple, like they say the letters don't mean anything, but they, you know, an R is a letter they've never used before, but R and S have very special meaning in race
for
cars.
Phil
and
Schiller.
Apple, there's a lot of Apple executives, who are, I'm not saying he owns a 911 R. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that, but I thought it would be a nice nod to the sort of aspirational elements of those letters.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty attractive phone. I'm going to stand by my prediction that this will be the best seller of all the new 2018 iPhones.
So I'm so eager to hear what Andy thinks because I was not prepared for the difference in experience that shooting with only the wide angle was because with the iPhone XS and the 10 and all the other ones, it would immediately throw you into telephoto for portrait and for the zoom and everything. And it was so close. And now it's much further away. So you have to sneaker zoom. But at the same time, because it's not dependent on those two lenses, you can get much closer. You can get further away. Right. And it only recognizes humans. That's a huge thing. You can't portrait mode your on the front. You can. But on the back, you can't portrait mode your beverage, your pet, anything like that. If you can't see a face, it will turn off portrait mode. But within that range, there's a lot more variety. Like I just found the whole experience, especially with the modeling they did for the lenses, almost like I had two new prime lenses and I could switch between them.
Andy is a serious photographer.
That's what I mean. I need a serious photographer's opinion
on
this.
And I'm curious what he thinks.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to get my hands on one myself. I probably won't be able to write about it for another month or so.
Yeah.
But Renee has been going on for at least a year about one of the most important aspects of photography these days, that it almost doesn't matter what sensors and lenses you have in a phone now, because it's the computational photography mojo that's going to make or break your photos. That the things that you can do, the proof is really in the pudding now. You just really have to take a look at the pictures and not really worry about whether this device has one lens or two. It took me a while to break my habit of saying, oh, well, I'm never going to use digital zoom because all they do is they blow up the pixels and it just looks ugly. But no, they get as much information off the device as possible to make intelligent decisions about how to fake zoom an image. So it's very, very possible that if you think that you're going to need the telephoto to get the best pictures, that's probably going to be true, but maybe you're not really going to notice the difference between the XR and the XS. So as I've been saying for the past couple of weeks, I think the choice isn't so much between the XR and the XS for me. It's a choice between spending $1,000 and getting an XR with all the bells and whistles, with more storage, with the case that you want, all these really cool things, or whether you, if you're on a budget, trying to get like sort of the more entry-level experience with the XS. And for now, I'm thinking that the XR plus more storage is going to be the way to go, particularly if you're shooting lots of 4K footage.
It's very interesting. Apple has given us many models to choose from because, of course, the 7 and the 8 are still around.
Yeah,
this has got to be the most iPhone models ever.
One thing worth mentioning, too, that I think they don't get enough credit for, and that's the video work. Like a lot of times when you see camera comparisons, it's only for stills. But they did so much work with the video camera this year. If you're shooting under 60 frames per second, and it's good to remind people that some camera phones don't even support 60 frames per second. But because Apple has custom encoders on the A12, it is fast enough to shoot 30 frames per second and interleave them with higher dynamic range data so that if you do shoot at 30 or 24, you get a much more, they call it an expanded dynamic range, but you get something much closer to HDR, and it also does a bunch of corrections. And if it detects that the light is not enough, it'll stand, instead of making you get bad video or having to go choose, it'll automatically give you a little thing and say, you know, do you want to step down to 30? Or I think it actually steps you down to 30 frames per second. And it's recording in stereo now, and it actually sounds like stereo. You record bikes going by, and you play it back, and you hear the bikes going by.
Wow. Wow, that's
cool. Which is really cool.
It's going to be incredible 6 months from now when you see all the third-party video makers and all the third-party photo camera app makers really not just use the APIs but know how to use these APIs to their fullest. It's an exciting product year, I think.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Apple does admit that they were overdoing the softening in the front-facing portrait mode. The selfie camera, and says, that's a bug. We're going to fix it.
They gave Neil a really interesting explanation, which was they were not pulling the sharpest frame. They were pulling a longer exposure frame and working off of that. And they're going to switch to pulling a sharper frame, which is, I'm just glad they changed it. Like my whole thing in the beginning was there's no beauty filter. And if you don't like it, just complain as bitterly as you possibly can and make them change it. Yeah. And it sounds like that's what they're doing.
And people did.
You don't need a conspiracy. Just complain.
Yeah.
You can file a radar, but sometimes you want to file a spiteful radar, and those are the ones that get results.
Spiteful.
But this really does illustrate whenever a brand new iPhone or Mac comes out and you hear isolated complaints that, oh, there's a new gate here, there's a new defect here, wait for a couple of weeks. If everybody sees it, then it is a problem, and Apple will probably figure out a way to fix it. If it's just a few people out of millions that are experiencing either an issue that is so out of the normal that they couldn't have anticipated, and they can't really engineer a solution to it, or it's a problem that is just so so weird that the best solution is just to replace the damn iPhone, that's the way it's going to go. So that's always wait until a few weeks when the mob suddenly everyone says that, no, everybody's getting really bad selfie results. That's when you know that it's an actual problem, and that's when you really do listen to Apple and say, well, what are you going to do about this? Are you going to acknowledge this, and are you going to fix it? And usually they announce that they're going to fix it at the point where they announce that they have fixed it.
You're not going to call it beauty gate, though.
I'm trying to be the iconoclast who tries not to say gate anything. I think that should be reserved for throwing a president out of office.
Okay, fair enough. Although Nilay does say beauty gate no longer. So this will be fixed in 12.1. We just got beta 4 for 12.1, so public beta. So I think we're going to be getting 12.1 fairly soon, Renee, you think?
Typically it would come out late October, beginning, November timeframe. But with the event, it's quite possible we'll get either the Gold Master or the release version at the event, or the release version will follow a week after when the product ships.
Yeah, let me just see what the... my software is up to date.
And new emojis, Leo. So it'll, as always, that spurs upgrades like nobody's business. We say we want all these special features.
we want emojis. All we want is the
new bagel emoji or whatever.
All we want is to complain that the flower emoji isn't the right kind of flower. And that technically the kind of flower they chose does not have leaves that are shaped that way.
Although, when we did report this last week, this is not a Montreal bagel.
I filed radars to as many Canadians at Apple as I possibly could.
Lori Gill really defended your love of the Montreal bagel, and we've all now decided we've got to go to Montreal and try these.
I mean, the proof is this: like there are people who drive all the way from New York to Montreal every day just to pick up Montreal bagels, and there are stores selling Montreal bagels. Like people advertise, there are no New York bagel stores in Montreal. Nobody wants them.
Nobody wants a New York bagel anymore.
They win on pizza. I'll give them pizza, but we have bagels.
Well, and it's really, in both cases, it's a case of the same immigrants from Europe coming to both New York and Montreal and making these bagels. The problem is that the New Yorkers, they just changed.
They made it big. No, I'm just kidding. I have nothing against New York. I'm not a food fanboy.
Stick with the traditional bagel. They originated in the Jewish communities in Poland, and Montreal somehow stayed more true to the original.
We left the honey in the water and in the dough.
Yeah.
We left the honey. Yeah.
A little bit of honey.
Familiar American food, there is an amazing story about immigration. I learned about pastrami, some guy came to the United States with the secret of making pastrami and sold and traded the idea to somebody else, and that's why we've got pastrami everywhere. Bagels, American Chinese food, spaghetti. It's a great story about immigration every single time.
So let me ask, Renee, are you Saint-Viateur or Fairmount?
I like them both. I mean, they're both really good. I'm not like a Marvel or DC guy, Coke or Pepsi guy. I'm not even really an iOS or Android guy. I love all this stuff. I mean, I play roles on TV, but I have love for as long as it's good, like just make something great and I will love you for it.
If I Venmo'd you a few hundred dollars, would you just send us a box?
I've tried, but they don't seem to keep. Like I've sent bagels to people on your call, and they come in and they say, "Oh, they don't." Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Can I at least get
moldy?
Can I get at least get a link where I can buy one of those hats? Because the more I look at it, the more I like it.
I got this I got this at the airport when I was leaving, just so that I would have something Canadian on me.
at the Toronto airport,
Montreal airport.
You found out of Trudeau, okay?
Yeah.
Well, all right, there you go. The 10R, it'll be in stores. Maybe it'll be in stores on Friday. I'm glad, as it turned out, I'm glad I ordered mine on Thursday last week or Friday last week, and it's on its way, and I'll have it for next week. Anything else to say about the Apple event? Anything we missed? Will we see new AirPods? Will we see finally the AirPower charger?
Again, Ming-Chi Kuo said it's coming like next year. He said new AirPods and AirPower either late this year or early next year. Right. People were asking on the iPhone XR pamphlet, just like the XS pamphlet, it lists AirPower as a charging thing, and that's not something Apple would leave in there if they didn't intend to ship it. So, my thing is, it's like Gandalf now, Leo. Expect it when you see it.
Yeah,
or maybe it's more like Mary Poppins when you need it but don't want it. The AirPods appear when you want it but don't need it. They don't show up. But yeah, there have been some people reporting about how there are supply shortages here and there, which is an interesting point, but doesn't necessarily mean anything. I bet that Apple would be kicking themselves if they had an opportunity to ship upgraded AirPods before the holidays and didn't, because it is a kick butt present for anybody.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Let's take a tiny little break, and we will be back with more. We're going to talk about chips and another interesting Ming-Chi Kuo. He's become the rumor guy. We don't see much from Mark Gurman these days, but boy, poor old Ming-Chi Kuo just firing up the rumors.
He's a supply chain guy. Like his ability to exfiltrate information from the supply chain is unparalleled.
This, I don't know if this is a supply chain rumor he's got here. Well, we'll talk about it when we come back.
Okay.
Renee Ritchie from imore.com. His great review of the 10R is there in video and in text. He's done both. He's an amazing man. Andy Inoko from Boston Public Radio, WGBH, And we will have more MacBreak Weekly in just a second. First, a word from our sponsor, the great folks at Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country. Number one in your hearts. 8 years in a row, number one according to J.D. Power and customer satisfaction. And number one in volume as of last December. They finally eclipsed that big bank with the stagecoaches and became the number one lender in the country. And I tell you what, I think there's a relationship. You make customers happy, they come back, they tell their friends. And of course, the mortgage business, how often do you buy a house, right? So it takes a little while. 8 years in a row, the number one in customer satisfaction. That means they're starting to get people coming back. Their next house, that kind of thing. They're getting people to tell their friends. I'm telling you, one of the ways Quicken Loans really appeals to people in my group is with Rocket Mortgage. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. You don't need to go to a bank. You don't need to fill out a long application. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. You can even do it on your phone. Answer a few simple questions. And then the power buying process begins. That's what they call it. Three steps that really make a difference in the quality of your experience. Step one, as I said, just takes about 10 minutes to get pre-qualified approval. Step two, within 24 hours, they'll verify your income, your assets, and your credit. And then they'll give you verified approval. Now, in step one, you're going to pick the loan, the rate, the down payment, the term. In step two, you're going to get a button on your screen that says print the letter, or you could just bring the screen with you, that says you're verified. That puts you right in the front of the line when you're buying a house. The seller says, oh, great, no contingency. That's basically you're a cash buyer. From their point of view, you got the money. But that's when step three kicks in. Once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. This really takes some of the anxiety out of home shopping. Because you're locked, your rate is locked for up to 90 days. And as rates are continuing to go up, that is kind of reassuring. You don't have to worry about it, you know, suddenly costing you tens of thousands of dollars more to get that house. Rate Shield approval means they lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. 3 months to look at a house, find the right house. If the rates go up, doesn't matter. Your rate stays the same. Oh, but if rates go down, your rate will also drop. Either way, you're going to win. It's exactly what makes Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage the best mortgage lender in the country. You can get started right now. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, and NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Here's all you have to remember. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. If it's time to buy a house or refi, they do refis too. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Ming Chi Kuo, I love saying his name, has an interesting note. He's an analyst, so we should mention that he's writing for investors.
Yes.
But still, when he says stuff, it's, you know, and I think he's... What do you think his success rate is, Renee?
I think it's super high. Like, again, good. I think he's super plugged in. Like, if it's anything involved manufacturing in China, I think his record's almost, it's exemplary.
Yeah. Yep. So he's talking here about Apple Car as well as Mac and iPhone. He says Macs with Apple chips, not Intel chips, by 2020, while an autonomous Apple Car system could be run from custom silicon by 2023, Apple's chip manufacturers in Taiwan, TSMC, yep, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. He says they will, and this is where the analyst comes in, they're going to continue to reap the rewards of being the sole A-series chip supplier. In other words, he's bullish on TSMC. He says Apple will become more and more dependent on TSMC due to its high-quality design and production. They're taping out 7 nanometers now.
Yep.
I mean, Intel's maybe abandoning 10, maybe not, but they're taping out 7 now.
And Samsung keeps trying to win Apple's business back, but they haven't been able to yet. But I love that it's competitive like that.
That's always good. They still use Samsung DRAMs, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, Samsung is a huge... A lot of people jokingly say that Galaxy is not just a phone. It's it's an advertisement for... Because Samsung is not one company. It's a bunch of companies that all license the Samsung name. And there's Samsung Mobile, and there's also Samsung LSI. I think that's the name that does a lot of the manufacturing. And Apple's a customer. Samsung Mobile's a customer. And they would love to have more customers.
Now, we're seeing... I mean, one of the reasons I would agree with Ming-Chi Kuo is that the A12 Bionic processor in this phone, benchmarks are saying, is absolutely desktop class at this point. Yeah. And Apple can do things, you know, Intel's making a general purpose chip for a huge variety of devices. Apple's making its chips for its devices. It knows exactly what it needs. And among other things, they're optimizing JavaScript performance in the A12. So the iPhone produces the best JavaScript performance out there, which is a huge
boost. And it's not even turned on yet, which is hilarious.
Oh, it's not turned on yet?
No, those were the results before they turned it on.
Oh, my God. Wow. So look at Anantech. I mentioned this last week, but Anantech has a great piece on the amazing A12 Bionic.
And that's what's challenged Qualcomm recently, because Qualcomm has acted like a traditional silicon merchant for years. And that means it was in their best interest to have things like 32-bit stay on the market, because every month that was on the market, they just made more and more money off of it because it was a commodity part at that point. And then they were pressed to go to 64-bit, and they had to initially support Windows Phone and Android, which meant OpenGL and DirectX. And you know, the other people don't care about the baggage you're carrying for other customers. Apple gets to 3 years out, design exactly the silicon they need. So they're like, we want to do high dynamic range in video, build us custom encoders into the silicon that'll handle that so that we don't have to process any of it. And they're like, okay, we'll do it.
What, you know, that is an interesting point, because we have seen ARM-based Windows devices, and they're mostly on the 835, I think 845-based, Qualcomm 845 Snapdragon-based Windows devices are coming. And they're pretty sluggish. They're really not, the performance is not what you'd want. Do you think that initially in 2020, the ARM-based Macs will be low-end Macs like the MacBook, and perhaps not
they'll
as performant?
They'll be mobile, not – I think low-end is a harder thing to quantify. I think they'll be highly mobile because that's where Apple's expertise is. Right. So like a MacBook is not low-end, but it's super mobile. The MacBook Air is both mobile and low-end. So it's going to be interesting to see, and maybe even like the Mac Mini, sort of like the Intel NUC.
You know, Intel has announced a 265-watt Xeon, what is it, a 32-core Xeon. Yeah. That's going to go in the new Mac Pro. And that, for the time being, for pros, all those threads, that kind of performance, and you're not going to use a 265-watt part in anything.
The thermals that they have to design, like Intel right now, because they can't get the 10 nanometer, is doing what they did decades ago, and they're doubling down on cores. But those cores generate heat, and then the manufacturer, the case provider, those people have to deal with dissipating all that heat, and that does not make for great product experiences. And you see that with the new MacBook Pro, which was almost certainly designed anticipating Intel would at least not blow past by 4 years its 10 nanometer deadline. And you start to hit real thermal limits. But the other advantage that they have is that they don't have profit and loss per chip. So Intel, Qualcomm, all these people have to make money. Intel makes huge amounts of money on those Xeon chips. Apple does not care how much it costs for those chips, because they make all their money off of iPhones. So they just let that team race as fast as they possibly can towards the future.
Yeah.
Plus, Apple's in an unusually good position for getting the most out of these mobile-oriented chips. The thing is with mobile chips is that, like Renee said, there's thermal problems with it. There's cache problems with it. There's traffic management problems with it. They really are designed kind of they don't have enough overhead to create a great level of performance across all possible tasks, and with very, very inefficiently coded operating systems and apps. However, Apple is in a position where they can make sure that they've got an operating system that is optimized for not just mobile style processors, but specifically this processor that they've decided to put into this new version of the MacBook Air. So they can really create their own silicon that has such wonderful dynamics from start to finish that delivers exactly the performance of like a mid-range i3 or i5, but yet it's doing exactly the dance that Apple needs it to do. So I doubt that they would ever replace all of their silicon across the board with their own designs, but for lower-end Macs, like a new concept of the Mac Mini that is more like a NUC, more like an Apple TV, this could be a total game changer for how they design and build computers and give them a huge level of performance at a lower price point than anything that Intel could create.
And complete control. I mean, you want to control the supply chain. That's why
predictably know that they're going to deliver a certain thing on a certain time, and
they're not waiting around for Intel to get around to it. Yeah.
The original MacBook Nothing, when you took it apart, when you look at the iFixit teardown, it really looked like they were anticipating. I know that this is the CPO we're putting in right now, but believe me, obviously, we're in 2 years' time, we're going to have this new chip that's going to make this either a screamer or something, or take us down an entirely new path. And then clearly, neither of those things happened, leaving it as still a wonderful piece of hardware. But I don't think it's nearly in 2018 what Apple thought that it could be if certain of their suppliers could be counted on to supply.
Yeah. And I thought the Apple car stuff was quite interesting. Quo says Apple could make level 4 or level 5 autonomous vehicles based on these TSMC chips in a few years. However, these will be 3-nanometer or 5-nanometer chips.
Is that the quantum realm? I forget Ant-Man
it's
already.
It's pretty low.
What point do we
Holy cow. Well, I mean, you can go lower, I guess. It's pretty amazing, pretty impressive. So, Quo is saying he predicts that in 2023 to 2025, but that's not, honestly, 7 years is not that far off.
That's within the range of their targeting computers. So they could they could be firing shots now, assuming that they're going to land in that time. I could see them shipping those kind of chips. I'm not sure if autonomous vehicles are going to be, if the legal stuff and
there's
the
road testing
is going to be ready. Yeah,
I mean, consumer acceptance, and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's saying level 4 and level 5, which means level 4 is full autonomy under some conditions. Level 5, I think, is full autonomy under all conditions. So, and that it's still, according to the people that I talk to who are working on this sort of stuff, that's still kind of a mission to Mars sort of stuff, where you've got so many solutions to most of the problems, but the problems that remain are so huge that they don't want to promise any timeline whatsoever. But we'll see.
We shall see.
And I think it's not a coincidence that we're seeing so much AR kit and so much machine learning and computer vision. I think all of that is very synergistic with what the special projects teams are working on in a way to get their tech into our hands so that we can beta test the crap out of the very easy top level current technology stuff so that those teams are getting more and more feedback to make the next generation stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the cameras that are on the iPhone X are there to help simulate what a wearable Apple computer is going to be like, where they certainly aren't anywhere close to being able to produce something that is wearable by humans and practical to be used. But they do have a whole bunch of these AR-equipped, very, very powerful handheld computers that people are taking out into the real world. And all of the data that's being collected is helping to teach that as yet unannounced device how it's going to be able to work.
Tim Cook is now demanding a retraction from Supermicro, and he is joined in this request by Amazon and by Supermicro. So it's heating up. That story just won't go away.
It's totally appropriate.
It is not the first retraction Apple has ever called for. I've heard that from a few other Apple journalists, but it is the first time they've done so in public.
I mean, it's a Twitter generator. The story I've heard, and this is just gossip going around the rumor mills, and there's no way, especially for me, to validate it. The suggestion is that someone wove this story, a single source wove this story, and it was so compelling that it really did become like Red Team 3, where every other story you heard was not filtered through the independence of that story, but the lens of, my God, this is such an amazing story. I wonder if I can prove it or not. And so people were saying things that have nothing to do with this specifically, but enough words sounded good that if that's what you really wanted to hear, you could hear those things. And then all of a sudden, the number of people corroborating it for you is like 16 when they're talking about totally different things, and you've spun this whole narrative out of whole cloth just to support the original one.
Someone would have found something if this story had been what it claimed to be, and no one has found anything. So that's clearly
still early. This 3 weeks, and I don't think it's as easy to find this thing.
Well,
but I agree that at some point, and then I would say you got to give it a little more time than 3 weeks. But at some point in the next year, if it is not found, that pretty much dashes. But
I agree. At this, usually
it takes a lot of skill to figure this out.
It takes a lot of skill to figure it out.
And equipment.
One red flag, however, is that usually when one news story by a legitimate news source comes out, that gives courage to other people who were not contacted, who were not known to these journalists, who then might talk to the New York Times, who might talk to people that they know and they trust. And we haven't seen anything like that. So at this point, I'd be very surprised if this story proved to be anything close to what they claimed it to be. But yeah, you're right. It is 3 weeks, but we're not seeing any of the markers that usually come by 3 weeks post time to verify that.
I'm not sure that that's the case. I really think that these are there's a number of reasons why people aren't going to be talking about this. It's bad news for all companies involved. And it is hard to find. And, you know, Alex tweeted this week that he has several of these Amazon, you know, 2015 generation Supermicros Elementals. And the problem is to find the chip on there, you have to know what you're looking for. And you need some fairly sophisticated hardware. It's not a trivial thing to find. There are lots of chips on these motherboards. So he has, if this happened, he has those motherboards.
So, I forget who said it, though, but someone was saying that, to Andy's point, in traditional journalism, once these stories, like once Bloomberg prints this, New York Times and Washington Post and those companies start putting money behind it. And not only is Bloomberg not sharing, and this not only has the author done this in the past where stories that they've written have not been corroborated by anybody else, which to me would not be a case to double down in, but a case to double down on, make sure you got this right. You start seeing those sorts of things, and the combination of Bloomberg really having nothing to offer in terms of leads other reporters can track down, and those companies not finding anything on their own where now they know where to look, I think is highly suspicious at this point.
Right. Yeah, and they're absolutely right. A subcomponent of that kind that's designed not to be found by physical search is going to be really, really hard to find. However, it's got to be producing some sort of traffic. Or else the entire project was just a waste of time.
I've been thinking about that because yesterday, Greg Farrow, he was adamant, by the way, and he has some expertise in this area. He was adamant that this could not possibly be the case for that very reason. We would detect it. And I was thinking about it. Remember that the devices that the Supermicro motherboards were going in were Elementals, which we use. You're watching, if you're watching a live stream, you're watching the stream created by an Elemental right now. The Elemental is connected to the public internet because it's a device we feed our video into. It compresses it and then sends it out to a variety of sources, YouTube, Ustream, you know, whoever, you know, is carrying our live feed. So it is sending data out to the public internet. Is it so far-fetched to think that perhaps it's encoding into the YouTube video information that if a state actor knew was in there hidden, a kind of almost video steganography, wouldn't be able to be exfiltrated without anybody knowing, because it's a compressed video. You'd have to
That's the point of the story, right? I mean, that's what they were warning us about. They're saying, like, they're getting you so nervous that they're doing all this sleight of hand over there. Meanwhile, we're running around and they're busy doing something else over here.
Well, but that's, I'm just saying that I think you could exfiltrate stuff without being detected. I mean, it's conceivable. But also,
I think part of their story was that this wasn't a chip that in itself constituted a breach of security. This was going to be something that was going to modify the boot process or modify something inside the firmware to allow a subsequent hack to actually open the doors wide. And that sort of traffic has also not been detected. So,
right,
I'm super, super skeptical.
We shall see. It would be a huge black mark, not only for those two reporters, but for Bloomberg Businessweek in general.
Yeah. And this disinformation is such a power, is almost as good as an actual attack, whether it's somebody who is trying to manipulate a stock price or a foreign power that just wants to get everybody to not trust their servers. That's right. Useful as well. So,
well, there's a lot. And the other side of it, which we've mentioned several times, is that this kind of stuff is happening. It's not. No, nobody says, "Oh, this
or
never
it will
happens."
Happen.
Nobody's saying that.
But remember, for all of the things we're concerned about, Russia doing during the 2016 election, their goal was not to influence the election in particularly one way or another. Their goal was just to seed chaos, which was going to be very, very useful to them one way or the other. Right.
Let's see here. Anything else we should talk about? I think we've done all of it. I think maybe we take a break and we come back and do our picks. What do you say? Any stories that you guys think I missed?
I'd like to talk about the how there's a person on YouTube who's said that they run a third-party repair business, and now a whole bunch of batteries that they ordered from overseas has been held as, quote, counterfeit, unquote, even though there's really no proof behind it. And oddly enough, this seizure happened right after he produced another video claiming that Apple is trying to make it impossible for people to repair their own stuff.
And it's all over the Canadian news, and I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
This is Lewis Rossman, who's a YouTuber. Yeah. He says he received a notice of seizure from U.S. Customs and Border Protection of, quote, 20 Apple laptop batteries. According to the notice, the batteries are counterfeit. Rossman says they're imports of, quote, original batteries, in other words, Apple batteries. So he's asserting that Apple's using the CBP to interdict repair batteries aimed to a repair facility. Is that it?
Yeah, and he's also citing that the timing is odd, given that this he never had any problems with this before until after he published a video about other repair policies that he doesn't like. Right. And also making point that I'm sure Apple doesn't have anything to do with this part of it, but that he gets a multi-page form letter from Customs explaining what he can do, which is essentially squat and jack. He doesn't have the ability to prove that these things are not counterfeit. They're not allowing for the possibility that these are actual legit batteries that were pulled out of other laptops and then simply packaged and sent to them. So it's a new chapter in what I think is an ongoing story. Apple's continually making machines that by their construction, if we can't decide whether it's by intent, are going to be almost impossible for harder and harder for third parties to fix, let alone the consumers. What happens when even people who have the access to tools, access to experience, even they get shut out of the ability to simply source their own materials from legitimate sources and fix things as an alternative to the Apple Store? That could be a problem.
Andy's exactly right, but I think it's a way bigger problem because you hear complaints about John Deere and Tesla and a variety of companies doing things like this. And I think if they continue down that path unabated, they will leave themselves vulnerable to lawmakers passing regulations. And when lawmakers do that, they typically do it in the dumbest way possible that really satisfies nobody. It is way better to get out ahead of this stuff. And I'm okay with some companies making appliances because I think that's one path towards the future, and other companies making incredibly modular stuff. But if you decide to make the module, sorry, to make the appliance, it is therefore incumbent upon you to provide everything possible at the lowest possible prices for absolutely everybody to get them fixed, because with the power of your appliance comes the total responsibility of maintaining it. Otherwise, you've got to find some happy middle ground where you have your beautiful medical facility with your top-rated repair people who, if I don't know anything about these scary parts, I can come in and get everything swapped out and a shiny new thing that I just want to take home and use. But if I don't mind getting my hands dirty, I can go and get those components. And I understand that you disavow any safety on my behalf if I choose to do that, but I'm a grown-ass repair person and I'll take that risk. And I say that as somebody who won't face lawsuits if my battery happens to explode and burn down someone's house. But there has to be something better than what we're doing right now, you know, for the companies and for us.
I think all these companies are going to have to learn to play nice, because if they don't realize it or not, older members of Congress are getting old and they're dying, or they're getting caught in affairs, and or they're being bought out by the industries that they're supposed to regulate, and they're leaving the House and the Senate. And now younger people who grew up with iPhones, who grew up with computers, who absolutely understand all the problems that some of us have been trying to explain to the government for a great amount of time, they're going to be the ones who are not going to simply be, who are not going to fall for distraction techniques. They're going to say, why is it that when I drop my iPhone, when I dropped my phone, my local shop told me that they couldn't repair the screen because they're embargoed from being able to get the part that they need. And so the only thing I could do was go back to my phone store and pay for a brand new phone. They're not going to go for a distraction. Oh, well, it's such a technical. Believe me, 32-year-old member of the House of Representatives. It's so technical, you wouldn't understand it. And you're talking to somebody who probably built their own gaming PC at age 14. So
I had this problem with Toyota. Like a month ago, I had a dent because I get dents. Every time I park at the airport, I get dents. And I went there and they said, you have to replace the entire panel. It's one part now. It's part of our crumple zone protection and we can't just bang it out. And so I went to my friend who just banged it out. But they would not. Yeah. They absolutely would not do that for me.
Yeah. Challenging. By the way, I have a date with a Pikachu and a witch's cap, so we're going to move this thing. Move this thing along. I don't know. Yeah,
Renee. Get a shiny, Leo. Get a shiny.
Oh, you know, are shinies good for anything but bragging rights?
They're totally bragging rights.
Okay, so I got nobody to brag to. So I'm going to.
Lisa,
I'm going to stick with my.
Honey! I got a shiny.
I only keep amazing Pokemon. That's all. That's it. It's got to be amazing. Amazing or nothing.
Obviously, I get my Pokemon from shelters. I don't care about these breeding farms that you go to.
Yeah, I know. It's a shocking. Let me just see if I can catch this one in the hat. Our show today.
Sorry, go ahead.
Our show today.
Pikachus, half Charizard, they need love too. They're mutts, but they still have personalities. And
we're never going to get the Niantic advertising campaign because we just keep giving them free ads all the time.
Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. I love IT Pro TV, and I think a lot of you do too. IT Pro TV is the way to either get a job in IT or to polish your IT skills and get a better job or just keep your existing job. Recent MIT study just found that IT occupations have grown by 19.5% between 2004 and 2017. That's 8 times the growth rate for other jobs over that time. 8 times. It's never too late to get that job in IT or start an IT learning process to move you up the ladder. And the best place to do it, the most engaging, the fun place to get that good information is IT Pro TV. From CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council and VMware, over 4,000 hours of on-demand, binge-worthy, fun training in every possible category. The hosts are great. They're not only, you know, in working professionals in the business, but they're just really good at community. They care about it. They're passionate. It's a talk show format, kind of like what we do. If you watch it live, there's a chat room going on at the same time, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Content goes studio to web in 24 hours, so there's always fresh content. It's easy to find the course you need, too. They're listed by category, cert, and job role. You could stream them or watch them on demand anywhere, on your computer, on your smartphone. They've got iOS and Android devices. Of course, it works with Chromecast. They've got a Roku app, an Amazon Fire TV app, an Apple TV app. I mean, really, you could start on your big screen TV, get in the car, listen as you drive to work, watch it on the computer while you do your job, and before you know it, you're going to absorb all the knowledge you need to get a great job in IT. And if you manage an IT team, you can keep your team's skills up to date with interactive training they'll actually enjoy watching. The Pro Portal from IT Pro TV gives you full control over their schedule. You could track their results. If you're a business, go to itpro.tv/MacBreak. You can request a demo, ask about their extended trials. If you're an individual, itpro.tv/MacBreak. Learn IT, pass your certs, accelerate your career with IT Pro TV. itpro.tv/MacBreak. The code is MacBreak30 for 30% off for the lifetime of all active subscriptions. You also, if you're signing up for a personal premium or a standard monthly membership, get a free 7-day trial. It is so great. Get those skills to get a great job or keep your great job or get a new great job. Don't forget to visit itpro.tv/MacBreak, and you've got to use the code MacBreak30 to get 30% off forever, as long as you stay active. I love IT Pro TV, and I meet people all the time who've got great jobs thanks to it. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. itpro.tv/MacBreak. Use the offer code MacBreak30. Renee Ritchie, you haven't had a chance to do a pick in a while. What do you got?
Leo, to be honest with you, I totally forgot to pick a week to make a pick this week because I was so busy. But I'm going to make a repeat pick just because this literally saved my life over the last week. I picked it before, and there's actually two brands that are really good. There's one that's made by Anker, and there's one that's made by Mophie. But what they basically are USB charging bricks.
Every Pokemon Go player, before we leave the house, Lisa says, bring me the brick.
And what I love about this one is that it's got both USB-A and USB-C on it. So it charges over USB-C, so it charges really fast. I just plug it into my MacBook. Like whenever I'm not charging my MacBook, I just plug it into the MacBook charger, so there's no extra cables to bring with me. And then it can charge USB-C out. So you can plug the USB-C to Lightning cable into your iPad or into your iPhone, and it can charge the iPhone like 3-4 times, the iPad twice. And if you're in a real pinch, it can even charge your MacBook. It's not enough to keep a MacBook Pro going if you're trying to like do Final Cut Pro from an external battery pack, but if you just leave it in your bag plugged in, or if you have like a MacBook 12 inch, it's enough to recharge the thing. So instead of carrying a bunch of different chargers and cables and things around with me now, I have two of these in my bag, and it's obscene to have two of these ginormous charging packs in your bag until. Especially for me, because the minute I hit the U.S., roaming kicks in, and whatever their differences are in how cell radios work from Canada to the U.S. results in me being able to watch my battery go down. It's just brutal being on AT&T's towers. And I plug it into this, and I literally I don't have to worry. I can make it through a day and a half no matter how intensively I'm using my phone. So I had one. I picked up two, and then I bought one for a friend of mine the other day just because there's not enough power in the world anymore, Leo.
I think that's a great. I don't have a Type C charger. I have all the micro USB chargers. I need that Type C charger.
Everything I'm getting is, and I should mention this too, like just a secondary mention. I had the chance to test out the Skydio R1, which is a drone, an artificial intelligence drone. Because it turns out the big problem with drones is that humans crash them. Humans crash them so goddamn always, Leo. And it just
you're talking to the king of crashers. You know that, right?
I can barely drive a car, so my ability to fly a drone is nil. And so they released their Apple Watch app last week, and I got a chance to test it out. So I took the drone out, and it just flies. And you say circle or follow or lead or boomerang or take a droney, which is like a drone selfie, and it just goes about. And so some of the footage in my iPhone 10R review is with a drone that was just circling around me as I was taking photos with the camera, and I didn't have to do anything, Leo. And it took off and landed without me destroying it in any way.
Don't tempt me.
Yes.
I know. Carson's saying no.
Yeah, it's $2,000, which could whet your aspirations quickly.
I've killed so many drones. I don't want to kill another one.
It's like YouTube is a drone graveyard. You can't turn on YouTube without seeing, I crashed my drone.
Are you going to do a review on iMore?
I did one. It's on YouTube, but it's I took Georgia and her family off-roading. We had the drone follow us. Yeah.
Oh, I may be tempted.
You might be, Leo. I was too scared to have a drone, and this one I'm actually getting, so.
Andy and Akko, do you have a pick of the week for us?
A couple of quick picks. One is the shortcuts subreddit on reddit.com, reddit.com/r/shortcuts.
Yep.
If you haven't been playing around with Siri shortcuts yet, you should correct this forthwith, because it's one of the coolest features Apple's come up with for the iPhone ever. But what I love about this subreddit is that these are individuals who are just showing off stuff that they've created that's helping them out. So just I subscribe to the subreddit, which means that when I'm looking for cute cat videos, then I just simply, there'll be a link for, I've created a shortcut so that whenever I'm playing a song on Apple Music, it will find me the same song on Spotify and give me the link to it. It's like, oh, that sounds very, very handy. And it'll give you useful stuff, but it will also, I think, inspire you to create your own. A lot of these are, hey, I want to try to do this. How can I do it? And people will jump in and help you. So really, really entertaining subreddit. The other one is Project Stream by Google. You might have heard about this. This is their kind of pilot beta to try to figure out how to stream games. So they licensed the new version of Assassin's Creed. So this is not like a cut down version. This is the for real Assassin's Creed that can play in any desktop type computer that has a Chrome browser. So any Mac, any Windows machine, no mobile devices yet. But it's free to join. They're going to be doling out invitations as they go. I got my invitation last week. And honestly, well, within the first 20 minutes, I totally forgot that I was actually playing a game through a web browser. It was it's this full console grade, stabby, 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 full motion, beautiful mist effects and cutscenes and everything. again, it just feels like you're playing like an actual console game. And it was, I had so much fun over the first 20 minutes that, yes, I went to and bought an Amazon Basics Xbox controller because playing well it with the trackpad was getting super, super old.
Yeah.
So it'll be free until at least January. So if you get hopefully there'll be enough so you can get your $60 worth of what you would have paid for it if you'd bought it for your Xbox or for whatever console you're actually using. It's exciting. They're not the first company to try to do streaming games. NVIDIA's doing stuff with their NVIDIA boxes. But for a free game you can play, for someone like me who doesn't want to make an investment in a console but who has kind of wanted to try console gaming, you can't beat free, or excuse me, $22 for the controller. But you only buy that when you realize that I could be stabbing and killing so many more Greek warriors if I only had a controller. So
nice. What? So it's the Greek era?
Spartans versus the Greeks, I think. I didn't really notice because I was too busy stabbing them with a long lance. All I cared about was that there was a dot on this person which said that if you press this button, you can kill them with your lance. And I said, okay. I can do that.
Let me recommend our triangulation episode on Friday. Bruce Schneier will be our guest. We love having Bruce on. We've had him on before. He is probably the best, after Steve Gibson, the best-known security guy. Of course, one of the very first things we'll talk about is the Supermicro story from Bloomberg. But he's got a new book, Click Here to Kill Everybody. You might like that, Andy. Security and Survival in a Hyper-Connected World. And tying into that, and I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but there's a great post at blog.bejarano.io. called Hardening Mac OS. And I look for these guides for other operating systems as well. It's really handy. And Mac OS pretty much comes hardened, but there are some very good tips in here. You may not want to do all of them, but there are some very good tips in here that you might certainly at least want to know about to making your Mac impervious. And I mean impervious to hacking. Some really great stuff. And he also says, no, you don't have a 100% secure system. You have to keep doing things like keeping your system up to date, preventing physical access, encrypt sensitive data, back up, and keep your guard up. But this is a really good article with a lot of good simple tips you can do in the preferences. blog.bejarano.io, Hardening Mac OS. And that goes along with Click Here to Kill Everybody. Thank you, Andy Iannocco. You'll find Andy's work on WGBH Boston, Boston Public Radio, and of course at his website, IHNATKO. Is it back up? Iannocco.com?
No, I've been working on things that would pay me money. I know.
This is,
well, you can, you know, the next time we get an ad for like people who will host your WordPress installation for you.
Okay.
We can use this as a case in point that if I'm moving from self-hosted to something else.
I just got from WordPress.com I think it's my 10th anniversary on WordPress.com. I just got a little notice in my. I know. Isn't that cool? You signed up. Was it 10 or maybe 12 years ago? It was kind of fun. So I do know some people who might host your blog, Andy.
Well, I don't want to brag, but
PHP Nuke and never went back.
Oh God! Remember that?
Yes.
And thank you, Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Read his iPhone XR review. Watch his iPhone XR review. Watch his videos, drone review, and
thank you, and
just pat him on the back because the man types like a crazy. Works so darn hard for us, and he'll be going to New York next week.
Sure.
You could do a bagel comparison.
Report back from the field, Mr. McPot.
We'll get you back in 2 weeks, I hope. But he will be watching the iPad reveal. We will be here doing it as well, live. Megan Maroney and I will be here 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern time on the 30th. That would be 1300 UTC if you want to watch us live at twit.tv/live. You can watch this show live every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, twit.tv/live. You can also join us in studio if you want. Always love having the studio audience. Just email tickets at twit.tv. If you're going to be in the Petaluma area, we'll put a chair out for you. And, of course, if you can't watch live, we can make on-demand versions, audio and video, available for you at twit.tv MacBreakWeekly.com/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. Or as I said, subscribe whenever. Look, that's a recent picture. I like that.
Aww.
Subscribe twit.tv/MBW and get it every week the minute it's ready, hot off the presses, hot off the Adobe Premiere presses. Thanks, everybody. Now get back to work because break time is over. See you guys.